Welcome, and you're listening to a Queued Up Media Group production of Geekologist Radio, a division of the Ninja Pancake family of podcasts. And now...
Shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Damien, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue into our gaming systems and ride that hype train from the past into the future. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. First up, we have Chris Two Wolves. What's up, man?
I am Groot.
Next up, we have the Beef Outs himself. Brandon, what's going on, man?
I am Groot.
I think this is a trend. Okay. Over to Caucasian Saint. What's up, Derek?
I am Groot.
If you can't tell, I think we may have a little bit of Guardians of the Galaxy on the mind. So first up, we're going to go into Error and Omissions.
Yeah, so last week, my new mic I was so hype about didn't stop the fact that I kept moving around the room like the microphone was still attached to my head like I had previously, which caused echo and the slower, lower voicing, and sounds like I was in a fish tank at some point. So sorry about that. I've changed the setup of the room, sitting closer now. So hopefully it all sounds better to you guys this week.
Awesome, awesome. Still, either way, we all got Yetis. Sound quality is gonna get there and be great.
Oh yeah, even when I was halfway across the room, it was still picking
it
up. It sounds
so much clearer, so much clearer. All right, so guys, you guys ready to get into NRQ?
Yeah.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on.
All right, so first up, we have We Are Groot, a.k.a. Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 2.
Yes, this was great. I enjoyed every second of it. There was so much jokes. They were hitting a mile a minute. It was just a fun time. It knew what it was. It did its thing. It was a fun time in the theater. What a way to start off the summer movie blockbuster.
Listen, the first thing I want to talk about, and I know Chris, you and I talked about this in Discord quite in detail, was the effects on Star-Lord's dad, Ego. So you're taking you know, we've seen bad CGI and stuff like this. Well, when you take it into consideration, we know that first off, the computer portion of this effect on Kurt Russell was actually done by James Cameron's new tech that he's developing for Avatar. And it's also going to be some of the stuff that he's using for up-resing and bringing into 3D and stuff like that for the Terminator 2 that's coming back out into 4K. But aside from that, it actually 90% of that was done by Kurt Russell's longtime friend and makeup artist. Most of that effect was wig and makeup, practical effects.
Making young people look old and old people look young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. So now finish up a little bit about the makeup talk with Kurt Russell and whatnot. There's just so much more to this movie. How about we just go around? What's some of your guys' favorite parts that you guys experienced in the film?
The running jokes, like how they kept them and earned them later on to be able to go back to them later. I love how they consistently took those jokes paid off, and you didn't know which ones they were, but they were just they earned some of these, like. If some of them were just by itself, like say Pac-Man was just by himself at the end, that wouldn't have been earned. But they earned it later with some of the dialogue they had.
I know the Pac-Man thing. I was just like, I was, the whole theater was just like clapping and laughing. It was awesome.
Since I went and saw it at the theater, and I had like two people in there, so I was able to like type shit on my phone so that I could write down some of the funnier lines. So like the ones that I liked were, I have famously huge turds. I thought that was awesome. That line was really funny.
That was so good.
When he called Rocket a trash panda, and that's not a good name, I thought that was funny. And then I liked at the end when Rocket looked over at Yondu and he said, "Welcome to freaking Guardians of the Galaxy," except he didn't use the word freaking.
And
I love it. Like, I love it. Yeah. So like that was a really cool line. So there was some really awesome stuff. The Mary Poppins line, I think, is
that was my favorite.
Yeah, probably the biggest.
It's like, that was
line.
My favorite. And he's like, is he cool, right? And he's like, yes, he's cool.
Mary freaking Poppins, y'all.
Mary freaking Poppins, y'all.
Yeah, I know. I was like,
yes, that like, earned that gave Yondu so much more crowd appeal. I mean, he already had crowd appeal, but it just added that crowd appeal there. Just so much stronger, made the character much more likable for scenes to come later. It was great.
Yeah, if you went into this movie thinking this movie was about Star-Lord and his dad, it wasn't. It was about Yondu. This was Yondu's story, and Star-Lord happened to be in the background. Last movie was about Star-Lord and about you know what he was going through. This was about a redemption story for Yondu, at least for me when I was watching it.
Technically, it's still about Star-Lord and his dad.
Yeah, but it had so many things layered in for Yondu because
no, I mean Yondu. I'm meaning Yondu as a stepfather.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
that's the thing.
I see what you did there.
So
with
the words. Yeah, see, being I took
your father and a daddy boy.
Because I took both my boys to this, and so this is like they're like my middle son was like, yes. He goes, dude's night out too, because the last one I took him to was Wolverine or Logan. We went and saw, and so it's kind of becoming a trend. Well, we're watching it, and then at the end, my oldest son looks over at me and he goes, "Did you deliberately play this?" I go, "What?" He goes, "Did you know that this was about a stepfather?" And I'm like, "No, I did not know that it was going to be like that, but I like it." I go, "Do you like it?" He goes, "You could be my Yondu." And I'm like, "Okay, but I just don't want to die." He goes, "I'll burn you. It's fine. I'll burn you." And I'm like, "Oh my God."
A testament to Yondu's character was at the end when they all had the tribute to Yondu. So you realized how many people he had touched. Even if he was a bad guy, he wasn't a bad guy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And in itself, that also was setting up for the potential for the upcoming – that like a lot of people are trying to figure out, well, which one of these things is setting up for the potential future in the other Guardians of the Galaxy films or possibly Infinity Wars? Well, the Ravagers have always been such a big part of that continuum and that story that – I very well see the future of this being that they're not going to be the Nova Corps is going to go away eventually, and then that's how you're going to get Nova. The Ravagers are going to have to fill that gap of the Nova Corps being gone until Nova rises. At least that's my opinion. That, or they're going to do a spinoff for the Ravagers alone, because you don't bring those big names in that were playing the leaders of the Ravagers and not give them their own story.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for those characters, though, a lot of those characters are original Guardians of the Galaxy comic book members. Oh, Fouts had his hand up. He was like, "I was going to say the same thing." he's pointing. Yep. And so James Gunn came out and he said in an audio interview at one of the premieres, asked a question, and I think he might have said too much, but he basically said Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is going to be the last one of this iteration of Guardians. And those choices of words kind of shows that if it continues, there will be different Guardians, most likely without him at the helm too. That could be also what he's hinting at, but this could be the setup of those characters taking over the Guardians of the Galaxy.
The fourth one is supposed to be the setup for the next generation of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Did anybody notice the connection between Yondu and Star-Lord and Stallone's T'Kar and Yondu, where he didn't want to give up on him? Like, he still had a soft spot for him. Yondu had a soft spot, you know, for Star-Lord anytime he screwed up. And Stallone's character had, T'Kar, I think is his name. Had a soft spot for Yondu, even though Yondu screwed up. So I think that that's where that kind of transitions. It brings the old into the new. That's, you know, Yondu is the connection between Star-Lord and T'Kar. So like that, the old Guardians and the new Guardians, you know what I mean? Like he's the thing that binds them together.
He's the bridge.
Yeah. And so I thought that was really cool. And it led to some of the multiple secret endings. Like, I literally stayed through all of them. It was kind of silly at one point. It was just like, okay, so there's another one. Yeah.
That one was so awesome. Like, first off, I'm like, okay, is this going to be a joke? Did he get an arrow stuck in him, or is he holding on to it and screaming? And then, like, where else? I'm like, nope, it's stuck in him. He's sitting there kicking it. It was just...
Let's talk about some of the endings and some of the meanings. I think that it's appropriate. It's been out for almost 2 weeks by the time somebody's heard this.
Yeah, and if somebody does want to avoid spoilers, just look in the timestamps in the show notes and skip ahead to the next section if you want to avoid the spoilers.
Okay, let's talk a little bit, you know, Stan Lee being able to be the go-to character to bridge all Marvel films.
It's because he's a watcher.
Yeah, he's a watcher.
That's awesome. First of all, he is a watcher because all he does is watch. But second of all, he was just like, and I was once this guy. And like, so he's telling the story of like every person he's ever been in any Marvel movie, which I think was really pretty awesome. And then you realize, okay, he's just being himself. Like, he's never changing. He's just that same old guy, just in a different costume, watching everything that's going on. I thought that was interesting.
Reporting back. Yeah, he's more the Watcher's reporter, though. Mm-hmm. He's sort of their feet on the ground guy that goes out and gets information, reports back, and say, okay, give us the intel, and then go back. And that was funny.
We heard that James Gunn wanted to have a conversation about Adam Warlock. And so the pod that they called Adam was like, okay, well, if this isn't a big flashing neon sign that says that's who this is going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 3, I don't know what else does. So a character that grows up in a culture believing he's supposed to hate the Guardians, goes against them, and then figures, oh, wow, they're not actually that bad of guys. I think I might actually want to join them. Can I say something else as a side note? How awesome was Dave Bautista in this? Because I thought his character was amazing. Oh, it was fantastic. so much more fleshed out than Rocket Raccoon and Groot and anything else, I thought. Just the one-liners and the laughter and like the big chuckles, and he had a lot of really good lines. I thought aside from Yondu, I thought Bautista's character was just fantastic. It was really, really well done.
And the other thing with this is that Marvel's getting huge kudos from the community that is involved, like from the autism community, because so many people are coming out. And even though they didn't necessarily mean for his character to appear autistic, but because he takes things so literal, the high-functioning autistic children and adults are flocking to his character because they're like, he's like me. He doesn't get jokes.
You are so ugly. Yes,
I was going to say that. Yes. The Mantis is ugly running joke was fantastic.
That was awesome. Now, you guys talked about my favorite scenes, and the interaction between Drax and Mantis are some of my favorites. Mm-hmm. That is my favorite parts of the entire movie. It's just the two of them just interacting back and forth.
At the end, like, my son was like, he's like, man, I really thought Drax and that gal with the antennas were going to hook up.
Yeah, the naivety of her character, I thought, was really well played. She doesn't really know what or who – she knows who she is, but she doesn't know what she is yet. And I think that, you know, if you see her in the next – because I thought she was one of the characters that was going to get taken out pretty quick. You're going to see her again, and you're going to see her grow. I don't believe you're going to see her in Infinity Wars. I don't think that her character carries over in Infinity Wars, but I do feel like you'll see her in Guardians 3 as a character that's a little more matured, especially with knowing what her power is and the ability to quiet people or to calm people. I think that power is going to be kind of blown up a little bit more and whatever.
Yeah. And her powers in the comic books, she has a lot more powers. She has quite a few other powers, so maybe she fleshes some of those out later, and she was being held back.
I was going to say, because like with her power set, I could see her definitely being a very big asset for Infinity Wars. Mm-hmm. But maybe perhaps not Infinity Wars. Maybe she would be something like, maybe Infinity Wars happens, and then they know that they need backup, and she comes in with the hero, like there's some other group of heroes that come in as the backup. In the gauntlet.
The biggest asset for Infinity Wars is having Gamora's sister come back into the fold and being there to help in that scenario. I thought that kind of ties what's going to go into him, because you have to have assets or things that are going to go against him. And so I think those are the things.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We had a Howard the Duck sighting.
Oh, yes, we did.
Yes, we did. Oh my God! They need to. They keep saying that they need to make a movie.
No,
they
can't. Great for cameos. Yeah. Great for cameos. Terrible for movies.
Yeah, they can. They don't need. Need is a strong word.
Yeah.
The other thing that we saw that I want to touch on before we stop with this is the fact that we saw a teenage Groot being super sarcastic to Star-Lord.
Oh.
It was like,
oh my god, that was so epic. I love Groot.
And
Groot is my favorite.
You got to see that Star-Lord can communicate with Groot and understand what he says just like Raccoon, which it wasn't before. Like, that's
never
something completely new.
Yeah.
You know, so that's something completely new, which I think is really cool, too.
Yeah, that shows the time that's passed, because this is only a few months later in that timeline, so this shows time has passed. People will, I guess, learn to interpret his language later. But for me, there was only one negative that I found in this one, and that negative was that sometimes they had a joke interrupt the dramatic sequence, that it took some of that dramatic feels away. Instead of letting it play out and letting you feel it, they would insert a joke and interrupt it. So for me, that was like the really only negative for the show.
What one of the other things I wanted to say about Groot alone is that Vin Diesel in an interview was talking, and that through acting out, even though people are like, oh, you only have to say one word, but he has an actual full script of what Groot's supposed to be saying. And so he has to do like the different tone of voice and different,
he's interpreting it in Groot.
What he's reading as the script.
That's because Raccoon is like the monologue for him. It's great.
Bradley Cooper is the only other actor who has the script, knows what Groot's saying. So Bradley Cooper, whenever he's talking to Groot, he's ad-libbing Rocket's response.
Because Bradley Cooper's like, of course he doesn't like his name. Of course he doesn't want to be called that. And it's like, all he keeps saying is, I'm Groot. I am Groot. Like, it's so funny.
Yeah. Taser face.
That whole taser face. That joke was awesome.
That was awesome. And then, like, when he gets laughed at when he's trying to say, just please make sure my name's remembered.
What's your name?
Do me next. Do me next. he's like, she's like, you touch me, I'll break your hand. And I'll tear it right off. For me, this movie was one-liners interrupted by the movie. I thought the movie had a lot of great individual things. As a whole, I personally didn't think it was a great movie. I thought it was an okay movie. It was a good movie. Like, it definitely didn't live up to Guardians 1. I thought Guardians 1 was a much better movie or a much more drawn-out movie, like character-wise and development-wise. I thought that there was a ton of good moments in this movie. I don't know if it was a good movie. Like, there was a lot of really good moments. Like, I was laughing at certain spots. But at the overall story, aside from the Yondu stuff, which was... For the movie itself, seemed to be like a subplot. Like, it actually wasn't the major plot, even though to me that felt like more of a major plot than the whole Kurt Russell thing. So I liked the movie. So don't get me wrong, I really liked it. I saw it. I really enjoyed it. But I thought it was more moments than it was a movie as a whole.
Okay. So saying that, do you think that the graphics that they did to make Ego was overdone and took away from that, and they spent more time with the CG effects?
Yeah, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of watching Doctor Strange. A lot of that tail end of Doctor Strange, and it was like this really big, overblown thing. And I thought that the way that they were able to get to Kurt Russell in this seemed very... It's so simplistic for a guy who's all-knowing and all-powerful and have been around forever. All you gotta do is get to his core and blow it up. That's it. So it just seemed... that the plot line to me seemed very simplistic. I like, again, love the subplots. I love the Batista thing. I love the Yondu thing. The major overarching thing I thought was just kind of where they were actually going for something and trying to get to something, I thought was more interesting.
We did kind of have a Walking Dead moment in this, though, in the beginning, where the person he thought was a big bad lady proposes sex with the hero. Then the hero's gal's all like, wait, what?
Yeah.
She goes, for scientific purposes.
Yeah.
I thought this movie was pretty ballsy in the fact that it didn't connect to Avengers. It did not connect in any way at the end or at all into Infinity Wars. So I thought taking it and making it a standalone, because every other Marvel movie connects to the next Marvel movie, connects to the next Marvel movie, this thing was cut off and by itself. It could have been it's a standalone movie. It doesn't have to connect to any worlds aside from the world that it lives in. So I thought that was really cool, and I thought that it took a chance on betting on these characters after the first movie, saying, you know what, they can stand on their own, which they can, obviously, if you see the box office.
There's two connecting factors, both extremely minor. Howard the Duck being one, because yes, you see him in the other Guardians movie, but you also see the Collector in the Thor movie after the Dark World. And then after, as well as that, you also have Stan Lee. He's the other connector. That's the only connecting thing between them. But it's so minor that you would miss it.
So Thor Ragnarok definitely has to have some type of ending that literally is the bridge. That movie is the bridge.
Yep.
Because if it doesn't, it just leaves Infinity War hanging in the middle of the air. Like, okay, guess we're going to this now. Mm-hmm. So it really has to do something special. Overall, if I had to rate this movie, I'd probably give it a 7, maybe an 8. Like, I liked it. I thought it was really good. It wasn't as good as the other movie, but I really liked it.
See, like, the other one, the Guardians 1 for me was easy, like, a 9.5 when it came to just all-around entertainment. This one is, this one, I would say an 8.5. It didn't have the same things for me that the original had, but I still really enjoyed this one.
Can I say the one more thing, too, about the music? It wasn't the same as the first one.
No.
I thought the music was much... The music in the first one was much better.
The
much,
soundtrack
the
was horrible.
The whole... The one song that carried over that was at Randy, right? Like, or whatever it was a really good song. Like, and I thought it played out for the whole movie, like, really well done. But the rest of the tracks were just not as good as the original.
Yeah. For if you want soundtracks for that, go play the Telltale game.
Yep.
I'm with you, Damien. I'm on an 8.5, really, because and the original one about a 9.5. I'm same ratings. But a little different reason for my negatives on this one, mainly because of the dramatic elements I mentioned earlier, where you have a joke interrupting it, where you need that to play out to get the feels across. One other thing that bothered me was how the Sovereign can communicate with their ships across light years away, but the Ravager ship right above Ego can't communicate with them at Ego's core, but the Sovereign ships are in Ego's core and can communicate fine. Just little things like that. I was like, come on, why are you putting cheap tricks in there like that with it? But I did like that this plot was simpler. It didn't have a bunch of twists and turns in it. They did a very Empire Strikes Back. We're going to split up, separate. I am your father. I am betraying you. Come to me to the dark side. And then they have to come back together and defeat him. And I like that thematic element in there and how that played out and how simple it was to play it out that way. And they didn't try to make it too more elaborate.
Did you like the bad jokes? Like the bad, like the arcade game thing where they were chasing after him and they were in like twice... They were in those machines and playing out that whole, like, I'm in an 80s arcade, which
kind of I did like that.
The only reason I'm asking is because I, like, some people I've read, you know what I mean? It's like, wow, that was overplayed. Like, the first time was good. Second time was a little too much. Like, I got the point, you know, the first time that they did it. So that's why I was asking.
Even the sound effects while they were in the quote-unquote machines piloting them, it sounded just like an arcade.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly, and
that made me laugh.
To me, because they kept going to them being the bat, like chasing them, and they kept showing that I think the sounds needed to be there because it wasn't like something that was accidentally played in the background to make you feel that way. It was the actual sounds that are system. So making it sound like that arcade needed to be there, but having them continually be this force nagging at them, these gnats nagging at them the whole way throughout their trip, and not being the big bat, I think that was overplayed. Them being that
they did play, on esports in a sense with that arcade thing too. Because at the end, when there was one ship left, they all garnered around that guy. They're all hyping him up, and then when he gets blown up, they're like, "Oh, you suck," you know. So it was kind of a joke within the esports community. Yeah, with that
the too. Fighting over the controls in that, like in that scene, I was just like, "Dude, again, some parts were just like way too much. Like, who's got
it
the
was
bigger
overkill?
Who's got the bigger penis? I get it. Some left, right, side, side. That was the big Star Wars thing, like where it was like, you know, I'm controlling the ship. No, I'm controlling the ship. So
yeah, through an asteroid field of all places, same thing.
Yeah, also true. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the arcade part. I am going to a beercade next weekend. So pretty excited about that.
Nice.
Yeah. If you ever y'all come down to Dallas, I can take you to the one we got up here. Me and Tax went to that recently, and that was fantastic.
So in closing, moving on from the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I got one question for y'all. Do you honestly think that Ego is dead?
Yes.
No. No.
No.
Because he is energy. All it takes is for the energy to come back together, a la powder, and he'll be back.
Or Star-Lord can recreate him.
That's if Star-Lord still has power, because we saw it flicker out of his hand. So that's the question is, does he still have the celestial power? Can he still touch an Infinity Stone because of his power being from Ego? Or has he lost it because his power, his tie to the power is cut? Is it genetic for him, or is it cut, or is it tied to it?
He's 50% celestial.
Okay.
Just because Ego's gone, I mean, if you're half Mexican and you're half white, if your dad dies, you're still half Mexican.
Yeah, but both of those are human. This is a different thing. This is a celestial being with intergalactic cosmic power that's made up space magic.
You just like start talking about a genie.
Here's another thing. Can they cut the sexual tension between him and her? Because it's not there. Like, to me, it's not there at all. Like, there's no interest. Doesn't feel like there's an interest. It feels like he's half-assing it. It feels like she's kind of really, she doesn't care too much. So, like, they keep trying to do this. They've done it in two movies now, and I'm just like, can we stop? Because I would much rather him, like, the whole line, and I didn't mean what I said to her, and blah. It felt so forced. Like, that line, all of that part felt very forced.
I agree with that. All right, now moving on of this.
Sorry, 22 minutes of Guardians of the Galaxy.
We kind of expected that.
It's a big movie. It's huge. Like, we had to talk about
it. Yeah, it's the big center point thing. Everybody else is talking about it because everybody's been seeing it. It's a big topic. Not everybody is seeing is we're moving to next on Fargo. I missed covering it last week. And I was out of town today, so I missed episode 4. But I caught episode 3, and I'll just be real quick on it. Episode 3 was completely out of sync with the other ones. It was the main detective going to LA to figure out the origins of her stepdad, who was one of the early victims. And it's just way out of left field. And I'm really curious if they're going to bring that into the story at all, because that is I was not a fan of how this played out and how distracting it was. This has to tie in somehow, and I just don't see how, because his murder was completely random. All right, and for what we talked about last week, we say we're gonna cover some Silicon Valley this week, but we're gonna skip it. We're not all completely caught up. I'm too in. We knew we made a lot of bold promises of what we were going to be watching and covering last week, but it's been a long one for us work and life wise, and we also have all the regular content we've been keeping up with, so we definitely have not been able to keep up with all of those. But I am enjoying the two that I saw, and so for Bosch, I'm just going to do a quick season 3 review. I finished up on that one, and let me just say, Cajun was wrong about what I said last week. There was a lot of big changes on how they were coming after him, and they did the guys that I said that were gonna come back. I forgot how did I actually say that? I kind of minced my words a lot on that one when I re-listened to how I was saying it, but I predicted they weren't gonna come back, but the show was probably gonna do it, or they shouldn't. And so they fully came back, and when it came back with a force, and they foreshadowed really hardcore the character that they came back to kill. And luckily, they didn't kill him. And so I was really happy about that. I was really happy on the resolutions on how he trapped the Marines. So for Boss Season 3, I'm going to give this one a 7.5 out of 10. Good film noir detective show. Can't wait for next season. It's just one of those. It's probably not going to make my top 10 list, but it's just an enjoyable watch just to put on, pay attention to, get it watched and out of the way and continue on. Because this isn't the big polarizing stuff. This is just the good sit down and enjoy stuff. Now we're going to move on to Mr. Chris. He has a new show for us to talk about.
Yeah, so you get on Netflix and you're like, okay, there's nothing on network television at this point. There's nothing that I need to watch or need to see. And so last night I literally spent like 10 minutes flipping through Netflix. And then all of a sudden I come upon this Will Ferrell flick from 2010 that I've never heard of called Everything Must Go. And then I'm like, oh, well, you know, this looks a little interesting. I wonder if he's trying to do what Adam Sandler tried to do and play a really straight part in a dramatic movie. Of course, that's not Will Ferrell, so that's not what this was. But he does play a character named Nick, who recently gets canned from his job and also has his wife kick him out outside of his house because he's a drunkard. Father was a drunkard. So, like, I mean, he has an alcohol problem and in and out of rehab. And he gets himself into a scenario in which a coworker says that in a alcoholic state, something occurred that later you find out in the movie may or may not have occurred. And all of his shit sitting outside. So what does he do? His buddy's a cop, and he says, listen, you have 4 days because you have right to remain if you plan on using this for a yard sale so you can stay on premise. So he's sitting out on this lawn chair just boozing it up with his kid who's riding around on a bicycle, and he's like, hey, kid, you want to earn a few bucks? Help me start making some signs to sell this stuff. And so it's a story of him kind of learning about this kid and a neighbor across the street who's brand new to the neighborhood, husband not there, she's pregnant, and he gets a sense that maybe the husband is him in the sense that same type of guy, drank too much, married to work, loses wife, and it's kind of how that story progresses. I'll be honest with you, like, it was actually pretty good. Like, my wife sat through the whole thing and was, like, at first was, like, playing on her phone, and then eventually was like, oh, hey, I'm gonna kind of finish watching this. So I really liked it. I don't like Will Ferrell in a lot of stuff, meaning like some of the later comedy stuff that he's done as of late has been really crap to me. But this was a huge turn from Talladega Nights and wherever he was back when this was out. So, and the fact that I never even heard of it, I think speaks to the fact that this was like a straight to DVD or whatever. But I would recommend it. It's only an hour and maybe 30 minutes, 35 minutes, but it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, it's just definitely a good film. That's the one with the bakery too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. My wife and I watched it actually when it came out, because she saw the preview, she's like, "This one looks interesting." We actually watched it on a date night, and it did go into theaters. It was just in theaters though for only like 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, that's smart. Yeah, I remember seeing a trailer for it and being disinterested, but. Just because of that, it's like, what is this, Will Ferrell in a dramatic role? I'll catch that later, and it just later never came. But it's good to hear. I'll keep that one in mind.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. It's definitely worthwhile to watch, and it's something that you can watch with your spouse, and both everybody will get something out of it.
I actually felt for him as a character, like when he was in the film, I felt like somebody who was down on his luck and who was turning to alcohol, and that was his only resource, and he had nothing else left. And so the way it wrapped up was kind of – it wasn't in a bow, which I thought was really nice too. It kind of ended on a note that was – you kind of thought about it for a second, but so I appreciated it. But again, just a Netflix movie, and if you got nothing else going on, you can knock it out in an hour and a half to an hour. I think it's out maybe hour and 40 minutes at most. So that's not a very long movie nowadays. Everything feels like two and a half hours to watch anything.
Nice. Well, moving on to the next show. And Mr. Saul Goodman right here is slowly getting closer to becoming Saul Goodman. And continuing from Bosch, but trying not to talk in circles like I do when I talk about that one. Cajun was wrong about the entrapment play I said last week. Because they introduced a completely new character. They introduced Chuck's wife right at the beginning. And I don't like that type of intro. Where you all, especially for me, a theory crafter, I crafted all this theory about what was going to happen in my head. And it eliminates all the theory crafting when you introduce a complete new character that has an entirely new take on the scenario with an entire backstory you show for the large part of the beginning of the episode. And eliminates everything out of it. And even when they're on trial, they even talk about, oh, I thought you were going to entrap me, which is what I was thinking they were leading to as well. And then they completely bypass that route altogether. And go about 5 minutes forward if you don't want to hear spoilers, people who are planning on watching this. But the actual entrapment play was to completely admit that everything that Jimmy admitted on the tape was Jimmy's talking and admitting it, and it wasn't entrapment. The play was, I was lying because my brother has a severe mental issue, and they basically completely expose his mental allergen to electromagnetism by bringing back Yule. If you remember Yule, the big black guy from Breaking Bad, they bring him back. And the way they bring him back is they go to the vet, who's basically the guy who gives out all of the little side jobs if you need something done. And he asks him, do you need him to fit into small spaces? And the answer is no. And so when you see him walking, it's like, that's why they asked that question. And he plants the thing on Chuck, which completely blows it open. He gets, and Chuck's ex being there, that's the big twist. It makes him melt down even more so, because it gets him to that state of anger and really shows how crazy he is. And it's game, set, match. And I loved how that played out. Courtroom drama, I don't think can be done better than Better Call Saul, because it does so many great twists on things and so many great takes on things that, same way, like how can you do low tier drug making and mafioso stuff and make it grossly entertaining? That's Breaking Bad did. This is how, what they're, Vince Gilligan's doing with Law. Damien?
Are you mean to tell me that Night Court was not as enthralling? Come on now, you got Bull?
Yeah.
Nothing beats Judge Judy. I don't even want to hear it.
Yeah, because that's real.
Well, Judge Judy. One of these days, we'll have to just do a separate episode of our favorite crappy law shows. But for right now, I'll put Better Call Saul above any and all, because everybody else has been sticking to this formula, and they are doing things their own way. And Vince Gilligan gets all the kudos for that. And I'll pass this on to Mr. Damien.
Hey, so I actually was doing kind of the same thing Chris was doing, was going through like Netflix, seeing what's going on, and up pops a new film on for them for streaming, which it's from IF. You get it?
Somebody almost died.
It's one of the independent companies that they have coming out there, but the movie is called Beyond the Gates. It's from 2016. It's a 1 hour and 24 minute film, so you know, if you just got a little bit of time, you just pop it on. The premise of it is two estranged brothers reunite at their missing father's video store and find a VCR board game dubbed Beyond the Gates that holds a connection to their father's disappearance. Now, what actually got me interested, I saw the title to it, I was like, meh, but then you know how Netflix will start springing up and it'll start showing you part of the film? The opening scene is that 80s like phonic music that they would do, but it wasn't bad, it was actually decent, and it really reminded me of Stranger Things. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna give you a couple seconds, and I watched the whole opening sequence, and it's going through the inner workings of a VCR. I'm like, okay, I'm right, let's see how it is. One of the actors in it, actually, which is the thing, is I also recognized Chase Williamson. Mm-hmm. Who he was from, if you've seen the movie, John Dies in the End, he's in that one. He's in a few other more indie style films. But I was like, okay, I'll just go ahead and give it a watch. And it's actually kind of fun, because like, do you guys remember like the VCR games where you'd play you'd have the board game in front of you, they'd have you like wear 3D glasses and play it in front of, oh man, okay, never. I'm aging myself now, but. Oh, man, they were fun. They really honestly were. But cheesy as all hell, but they were fun.
Closest thing I ever did to that was watch the movie Jumanji.
Oh, my God. Well, this movie is on that premise. It's a horror-based thing, but then eventually playing the game, things start happening to other characters in real life, and then they get transported into the game, and they have to try to complete the game in order to save their father's soul is what they wind up doing. But it's really, for an hour and 24 minutes, it's like, yeah, is it something amazing? No, but this thing actually, garnered some awards at the Sundance Film Festival. Not the best acting in the world, but definitely something worthwhile if you don't have anything else to watch and you like the horror genre, just give it a watch. I definitely would rate it, I'd rate it a, It's like a 6.5, but you know, it's not bad. It's worth a while. It's worthwhile if you don't have anything else to do.
All right, so next up on the list, and I know we're going to get shade from at least one person, and that's going to be American Gods Episode 2. Chris, go ahead and lay it on us.
I'm not laying anything on anybody. I'm not even actually going to talk. I'm going to let everybody else talk first.
Speaking of Pac-Man, guys.
So, I'm going even further back. I'm talking about the intro scene. Like, what was this? So a modern African god in the past? How does that work? Like, how do you gain followers by killing everybody on a boat? What was the purpose of that power play? Because it looks like everybody's trying to get power by gaining followers and worship. How do you get that from that one? I don't get that part.
Well, he's able to go back. Whatever he's doing, he's able to travel in time. So
yeah, I need subtitles to understand some of the things they're saying in this show, because I was trying to understand it without subtitles on the version I was watching, and I always had to turn the volume all the way up because there are some thick accents and speaking very big words very fast, and I was like, what is going on? I'm trying to catch up.
This show is not for the average person at all.
No,
like at all. Like it, I. I can't even begin to talk about the fact that, like, how disinterested it by the second episode this has made me, and I'm really disappointed with the fact that I really wanted to watch this when I first saw what it was about.
Would you rather watch this or Legion?
I don't. It's a toss between not caring about either at this point. Like, I'm watching this show right now because we do a podcast. I wouldn't be watching the show if we didn't do a podcast. And I fell asleep during this episode. I had to wait till the next day, finish watching this episode, and then Sizzle said to myself, what the hell is this episode about? Like, I get kind of where the point is going, but it's so, like, it's metaphorical and such, it draws it so far out that you have to, like, rewatch or know what's going on. It's just too much. It's too much.
Okay, this is kind of more like a...
It's too much for me.
So if you were to take Requiem for a Dream and put it in a blender with 300, that's basically what you get when you're watching this.
Do you know what I thought when I was watching this episode? I'm watching Fear and Loathing, because that's what it was like on a road trip.
Okay.
That's exactly what it reminded me of, was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And I was like, but Johnny Depp does this much better. Like, so that's
there's more drugs involved.
Really? Well, but that they were two dudes in a car driving across country, and they were, all they needed was bats everywhere. Like, when they pulled open the, like, on psychedelic drugs, that's all they needed, and they would have been Fear and Loathing. It was crazy.
Yeah. There's this episode, though, I did like a lot better than the first, but quickly going back to Brandon's question. If I had to pick a show, I would actually pick American Gods over Legion. Just because of the cliffhanger at the end, how they stuck a little more to a central plot in this episode, besides the scenes with Bilquis that didn't make any sense to this plot. I liked how they kept it with the Russian gods in the apartment for most of it. And how they decided to end it. I was not expecting that checkers game to go the way it did, and really left a nice cliffhanger that does make me curious on what happens next. So that is the one saving grace that I think they tied it up. But not knowing any of the history of these gods, and not being, like Chris said, you have to be like a specific researched person to understand all of these things, or be constantly on Wikipedia the entire time you're watching and every time you hear a name to get any of these references. And that's a lot of legwork just to enjoy a show.
It's for a person who's read the book. Like, if you read the book, you're going to love the show because you've already got all the backstory. But, like...
Or if you do know a lot of what the mythos between all these different gods... the only ones that screw me up is when they go into the new gods. All the old gods, when they appear, I'm one of those guys that's sitting at the screen just going, hey, you know, I'm all excited because that's my jam. But the New Gods, like, I find it intriguing. Like, you know, worship the TV. I saw that. And I was like, okay. I'm like, they have that artist that's going around and removing cell phones from pictures, from photographs, mm-hmm. and showing the disconnect between people. And I'm like, that, you take that artist, combine it with this show, and you got the New Gods.
The two themes throughout this two last two shows are worship her vagina, because that's about it. Like, that's literally the two tying binds between the two episodes right now, besides, you know, him.
Do you think they're putting that in there just because they can?
I think so. I mean, this week's episode felt very forced.
Right.
In the first episode, I know that was in the book because they specifically mm-hmm. talked about it in the after show, yada, yada, yada. But it almost felt like they're putting that in there because they're on Stars and they can. That's the only reason why.
Yeah, 100%. It felt very forced.
Yeah.
Sorry. When I saw that, I was like, yeah, great. I'm seeing a guy with a heart on.
I mean, I like the idea of the fact that he saw, like, an iPad and had a replay of the video. Like, that kind of stuff was like, oh, wow, he's, like, so he's seeing shit. Like, you know what I mean? That's really cool because, like, you know, he's playing it back in his brain and it's coming up on things. So I get that part. I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And then when they got to that Russian, it was just like, oh, jeez, what are we doing? Where are we going? So that part to me was like, it drew out so long in one episode. I really felt
he's trying to get in the last episode. He says, I'm coming to get my hammer. Mm-hmm. And the god that's there, he's the god of evil. And so they're trying to, he's the old gods. So Odin's trying to gather up his warriors to help fight the new gods. And that's what this is all about. And Shadow is a new god, but he's already been nabbed by old gods, and so the new gods are trying to recruit him because he's going to be what turns the tide.
The biggest problem I've got is this is only 8 episodes long through the season. We're already a quarter of the way through the season, and we don't know shit. We haven't seen anything. All we've seen is Bellaquist doing her thing over and over and over and over and over again.
And over again.
And a hammer.
Listen, this is what we need you to do as an actress. We need you to be on screen, make some old faces, and swallow some people up with your vajayjay.
Here's the thing, though. To Cajun's point, I don't know he's Odin besides the fact that you told me he was. That's never...
The Russian god did say it. He did say it.
Did he say the word Odin?
Russian god did say it. I actually paused and went back. Like, did he just say it? Because I felt bad last week when we revealed that. Like, did we just spoil that for people, and they're waiting to reveal at the end, but the Russian god calls him Odin in this
then
episode.
Then I missed it.
Really fast, really quick, and I had to back up and catch
it. I'm thinking to myself, we have to guess who these people... You're like, he's the god of this, and she's the god of that, and it's like, dude, none of these is spelled out. So, like, unless you know what the Greek mythology is of these gods, you have no clue who these people are.
If you stay through the episode at the end, they actually also... It's like, because they wait... They remind you, you have to watch the episode first. But if you have that question, they pop up at the end and they tell you who the god is and what he is of and all that stuff. That Paul pops up.
Yeah,
at the end.
But that's like hiding that's like hiding your story in Grimoire. I mean,
I was just gonna say that it's like Grimoire cards.
I'm here to watch the show. Tell me this on the screen. Don't make me wait to the end, read the stuff, then Wikipedia and IMDb to find out all this other stuff later. Tell it to me on the screen. That's your storytelling media. Use your storytelling media to tell me the story you want to do. That's way too much for me.
I'll continue to watch American Gods just so I can continue to throw salt if I feel it's necessary. But if it gets better, I'll actually say it's getting better. Like, I want it to get better. Like, I do. I just don't want to have to. Yeah. I don't want to have to literally have a notebook and do research while I'm watching it in order to make it get better. Mm.
The Bilquist character, honestly, I'm just like, I could do without. I'm like, I want to see more on Shadow and Odin and everything with that. Bilquist, it's just like, oh, what's the point?
All right, so Cajun, Bosch is going to be done. Better Call Saul, you'll probably talk about. Fargo, you'll probably talk about.
Right.
There's no really big movie that's coming out.
Valley. Yeah, Silicon Valley. Oh. We'll talk Kingdom Season 2.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
King Arthur will be... I will be talking about King Arthur next week.
All right, so I guess that ends us here on in our queue and where we're going next week, and let's move over to Game On. thing in Game On is Witcher 3 DLC. I talked about that. I was going to be covering this a little bit this week. I played a lot more of Blood and Wine, did a lot more of the side stories, did some really funny ones, did some long, intricate ones. I did the one where you bring two wineries together. And that was a great side story because you can easily miss the major arcing one if you're not actually reading some of the material. So that side story is you run into two rival winery owners who are trying to gain ownership of a third winery that's going to be passed off by the courts. And they each have issues with their own. And if they don't get those issues fixed, they can't buy it. And so they each try to hire you. And you got to decide which one to fix. Well, as I was going through one of them, I found a note that one of an attacker had on him. I read the note. And if you don't read the note, you won't get the continuation part of the side quest. That it basically is them being hired to do this to frame the name of that vineyard. And it's not from the other vineyard. So then you go check the other vineyard. And then you realize they have notes over there too. So somebody's hiring people to mess up both of them so they could step in. And you'd never find out this part of the side quest if you're not reading the notes that you're picking up off of these bandits that are attacking them. So I really like that little twist that you could easily just save one vineyard and continue on and help that person out. Or you can read the stuff, figure it out, and then decide these people are both in the right. I'm going to help them both own it. And when you actually do that, it does give you some much more rewards at the end because they give you some stuff. So I really like that part of it. Now, in the main quest line, last point on that before we move on, I really think there's more higher vampires in that, because as I'm moving along with this one, there's some side conversations happening. It's like, I think there's some people who are higher vampires here who's, at this point, the main villain is a higher vampire. I think there's some who are that, who aren't outed in public yet or aren't outed to the Witcher yet. And I've already have my ideas on who they are. One of them is this new lady who hosts the masquerade party. So we shall see if I was right on that one. I'll follow back up on that one later. But
I'll tell you what, you had me at vampires. I'm going to have to, I need to get that DLC.
Yeah, but then you need time.
I need to play the actual game first. Yeah, I need time. I need to really play the game first. Yeah,
and I don't think you really need to finish it, but you do need to be a much higher level because I don't think this one scales down. And so I'm level 47, 48 right now with Geralt, and that's making most things easy. But if you're in the low 40s on this one, quite a few stuff you're going to get pub stomped. So you need to be higher up to play this one. And then you got yours you want to talk about, my man?
Yeah. So I'm doing a review right now on a game. I actually got it mailed to me by the company. And I'm reviewing Flat Out 4. So I got to go in and to say that Flat Out 1, I played the hell out of that with my cousins when they were younger. And then Flat Out 2, my buddies and I, we totally turned that game into a drinking game. And I have such fond memories of it. I never played Flat Out 3, and I guess that's what supposedly killed the franchise. And another company came in, picked it up. Well, Flat Out 4, I got it. I've played it. I'm going to give it another good 10 hours before I start writing up my review. I've played probably a good 3 so far. If you were to buy this game right now, it would cost you $39.99. Right now, I would say don't buy it. I would say at a $39.99 price point, you need to be avoiding it. But if the company wanted to better do things with this game, they should have launched it at a $19.99 price point and have invested and just done digital only, no physical copies, because no stores are carrying this game. And invested that money that they put into physical copies into advertising so you can actually get people to know this game's coming out.
What is it?
Because it's a destruction derby game. It's like Flat Out's always been this destruction derby racing game. They'd have like arena combat stuff that was always really cool and fun. Very arcadey. It's not like, you know, this isn't a driving sim game. This is very very Cruising USA-esque with your kind of just, it's kind of floaty, the mechanics. But it was fun. But this game, so far, like, I'm gonna play some of the side modes with my son. They have a game where it's like called party mode, and he had these games like bowling and skeet ball and some other stuff that you do where you actually crash into a wall and send your driver projectiling out and try to like knock pins over and things like that. Now that, if I play it with my son and I get some enjoyment out of it, right now, I mean, that could get it a bit of a higher score, but as of right now, as it is, it's a like a 5-, like it, or not a 5-, it's a 5. It's like a 5, but like barely at a 5. Like, now that's also going at the point of me thinking as a consumer, if I had to pay $39.99 for this, I would have been absolutely livid. It has some good prospects to it, but the problem is that, like, okay, so I went to look for, I'm looking at the time. It was like 6 o'clock at night. That's prime time gaming time, right? I tried to get on to a match. I first tried to play just a regular PvP deathmatch on it kind of thing. Couldn't find anything. So then I'm like, I'm just going to look for any online match I can find. Nothing. It can't find a single match for it. Fouts.
So enough about bad games.
Hey,
let's go on to a good game that I've been playing. The reason why you can't find anybody on that driving game is because they are all on Forza.
That's what Horizon I was gonna say. That's
Hot Wheels. Picked that up, and the game is fun as crap. The last time I ever played a driving sim type game was Gran Turismo 3.
Yeah.
So it's been a while. I picked this up specifically for the Hot Wheels DLC for my 6-year-old son to play with me. And I didn't know at first, but you had to level up a little ways. But I did get the Hot Wheels area unlocked, and it is amazing. The track's just going loop-to-loops, corkscrews, and all over the place. It's fun as hell.
And see, that's what I was trying to get at, is that the fact that a new game launches, and you are losing out to a game that's almost a year old, and is beating you with DLC alone.
Yep.
That's not good. And so I'm going to give it more time. I'll test some things out. I'll probably talk a little bit more about it next week to get my final score on it. But as of right now, it's not looking good for Flat Out. And I'm thinking that Flat Out just needs to stay the hell out.
Good
tagline. I know. Yeah. It's going to be a good tagline there. That's going to be rivaling for show title.
Okay, so besides Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels Edition, I've been playing another game called Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams Direct Owl's Cut. It is one of the free games with gold this month on Xbox Live if you've got it. It's a side-scroller platformer. It's absolutely ballistically fun. It's just stupid, just jump left, right, but you can phase shift between two different dimensions on the fly, just back and forth to, in order to collect gems and things like that. The only reason I even picked it up is because it was a very, very small download while I was waiting for the 53 gigs to download for Forza. So I picked it up, tried it out. It was a blast. I highly recommend picking it up for Games with Gold because it is free. Why not?
Nice. I just, speaking of side-scrollers, when I was going through games with my daughter recently, she wanted to play more Kinect style games, and we did Fruit Ninja stuff like that. And she was like that one because it had a colorful picture, and it was one I picked up, I think, for free a while back. So Many Me, and she, every time she's done playing Kinect and is done with Fruit Ninja, she goes, "Play that one, Daddy," and then we try to do that one. And that one's a cute one for her to watch along with. She tries to play it, but it's right now it's too complex.
That's the one with the little blobs, right?
Yeah, and each level.
Yeah, the little blobs at each level, and they gather more and more of yourself. Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's cute. She tries to play it, but right now it's too complex for her big time. First couple levels she could try it, and now she tries it, and just 3-year-old hands it to me. But yeah, she likes the colors.
So next up we got, I'm going to talk a little bit of stuff from Game Informer, actually. Game Informer came out with a cover that's got, for their title, their main article in the this month's magazine, Top 100 RPGs. This cover is freaking amazing. Like, first thing I saw when I got it is, like, I want this framed. I want to give a shout-out to the author the artist, who is Rob Dunas. I don't know if I'm pronouncing your name right. I actually already talking to him on Twitter. Really, really cool guy. I'll mention up... his webpage and stuff like that in later episodes as I talk to him a little more. And
you got
to
earn that over here. Maybe.
Well, I'm hoping to get the guy actually on as a get to know your geek. But first off, I want to go into the article actually on some points that I highlighted. So, what would you guys think would be like the bottom tier of
Well, bottom tier means off the list for me. That's not even off the list because there's
does Kingdom Hearts constitute an RPG?
Okay. It does in IGN's list because IGN released the top 100 RPGs and it was on there. Kingdom Hearts 2 or 3, I forgot which one. Or 2 was on there. Yeah.
Well, Horizon Zero Dawn is actually on here for the top 100 at number 84. Destiny is on here at number 81.
That's a shooter.
Shared world shooter.
Shared world shooter experience.
Yeah, I think they are defining it as the MMORPG that the rest of the community just considers it, and not a you are your own genre shared world shooter that Destiny's tried to put themselves in the corner of.
No thanks. Nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yep. Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild scored number 47.
What the f- I'm sorry.
I agree that some of those, especially the Alan, should be higher, but
not 47.
But in some scenarios, newly released games, I think, need a little bit of time to percolate.
Recency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recency vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, because IGN's top 100 list, I think, only had one or two from this year. It did have Persona 5 in there, as in their top 100. Well, same thing. Well, it's deserved. Like, yeah, let it percolate for a little bit, let it marinate before it makes these lists. And I think there should have been cutoffs for both of these companies were doing that. I think there should have been cutoffs for games not released in 2017 because that eliminates a lot of stuff that people are playing now that are the hottest thing ever. Because there's so many good ones that did come out this year, you eliminate a lot of that fighting on. It's too new to put in the lists right now that you just could have cut that all out.
Because Persona 5 is ranked number 19 right now on their list.
Oh man,
that's a little high for me.
That's too high, I believe.
I like because like my old school bay EverQuest is ranked number 22, and like that's like my high school jam right there. That was my first MMO. Ultima Online is on here at ranked number 17. I think that one should have been higher because that was like what launched the MMO genre for the most part.
Is World of Warcraft number one?
No, World of Warcraft is actually number six. The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt is number 5.
Deserved.
Yes.
It was number 10. It was number 10 on IGN's too. So yeah, it deserves to be high.
Mass Effect 2 is number 4. This one, number 3, is like one of my all-time favorite games. It's Chrono Trigger. If you haven't played it, you have to play this game. This game is freaking amazing.
It was number 1 on IGN's. It was the number 1 all-time on IGN's.
Okay, yeah.
Chrono Trigger?
Chrono Trigger is amazing. Never got to play the sequel. I know it's a PlayStation exclusive. Okay, their number 1 is Elder Scrolls Skyrim.
Skyrim's a big game. It's hard to pull away from Skyrim.
But the thing is they did one thing that they and it's in black. All these titles are in white back. This is in black. Their rank number 0, which is their best 1974 tabletop game, Dungeons and Dragons.
give themselves a little number 1 honorable mention skip right there. That's yeah.
Yeah. I but just this cover alone, I put it on my Twitter page. I'll post it over to the Geekologist one as well. This cover is just, the artwork's amazing. All right. Now, Chris, you have something to talk about.
I sure do. IGN today was Twitter blew up on this subject.
Yeah, it did. It's been nuts.
Prey on PC got a 4 by Dan Stapleton. And I actually was interacting with him a little bit on Twitter. I sent it to Fouts. It was kind of nuts.
I saw.
And I gave a shout out just for the fact that here's the deal. If you're a reviewer and you give a 10 out of 10, then all of a sudden you're getting paid off by the developer for the game. If you give a 4 out of 10, you're cynic. So where's the happy median? He gave the gamer score because at the 34-hour mark, he hit a bug that corrupted a save. So he reaches out to Bethesda, which is Arkane Studios. It's one of their subdivisions. They give him a save file. Give him a save file at the spot that he's at with what he has. 2 hours later, it corrupts again. And he can't resave again. Mind you, Prey is a game in which you have to save, play, save, play, save, play, save, play. Because you cannot, if you don't do that, you could play 2 hours and then be back 2 hours if you don't save at the exact spot. Because there is no checkpoints. So his review score is a 4. The game is amazing. It's broken. I cannot play this. And so people just were up in arms about the fact that he gave a 4 to a Bethesda game. And then there's a bunch of cynics out there saying that the reason why the 4 was given out is because Bethesda only gives out game day of now and not prior. And so he was forced to rush and there was a patch and blah, 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 blah.
But he had 40 hours committed to this game, though.
He did. He did. So my thoughts, what I wanted to bring up to the group, and I think like each week we've been talking about a big topic that kind of permeates through either the gaming world, movie world, whatever it happens to be. This week it's this. Twitter's known for this, which is awesome because I love being on the heartbeat of Twitter. I think it kind of really speaks to the different ends of the pendulum when it comes to where people are at. Do gamer scores mean anything anymore? What qualifies as a broken game? And does game journalism in its state right now owe it to consumers to relay the message of what an air quotes broken game is? Those are the questions I guess I'm posing to the group.
Yeah, I mean, to me, honestly, as someone who's writing, or even if you're just trying to get into writing for these companies, you're pressured to feel that you need to give a good score because these companies gave you their game. You know, they give you a game to test out and say, please give us a review. Part of you is like, oh God, if I don't give them a good review, they're not going to keep me on their list of people who gets to review other company games within their company. But then on the other side is, if you're a reviewer, you're supposed to be the one that's given a score that helps direct people who are going to spend their hard-earned money on a product. So if you're not honest with the consumer, then you're going to lose following there. And so it's this balance between trying to figure out what you can do to be honest to yourself and true to your readers while also not completely pissing off the studios.
Yeah, I think that if you have any thought, if you're reviewing anything that's going through your head, what is the studio going to think of my review? It should be the quality of your review, not the score of your review. If you feel your review is accurate, your exact opinion, and it's thorough and the quality is there, that should be the only thing that matters, because that will permeate to your audience. They will understand it, and your audience thus should continue to grow and continue to get more review titles. And the thought of the studio in the back of your head, it only will hurt the reviewer, anybody who carries that in the back of their head, whether they should review a game this way or that way. But to Chris's point on like whether a game is broken or not, I think that that's where Metacritic stuff comes in, because for a single person, a lemon could be a bad thing. Like I can write a bad review in a car I buy that's a lemon. I give it a 2 out of 10. This car is terrible. Don't buy it. Yada yada. If the meta reviews, if all the reviews combined for this car or this restaurant I had a bad meal at or whatever combined to be higher, then that's what people base their opinion on. I think they should base their opinion on it. Everybody's going to one source, and in this case, a big source like IGN to get a review, and it's so negative. That does have negative effects on the game. But I do think the Metacritic scores on things like that are what should even it out, and this person should give what he feels is his accurate rating, irregardless of what caused it, in this case, possibly a lemon thing in his system.
There's a lot of things at play here. One, the Metacritic score is part of his review. So it also, the bonuses for Arkane Studios are based upon what Metacritic scores are. So it can affect somebody's paycheck by what he says. Mm-hmm. So we'll take that there. Secondly, if a game is broken, or if there's a bug, it's not just one person. It affects the entire studio, which means there's a whole process. Potentially, there's a game that's coming out too early because it has to meet a quota because there's shareholders who care about this game. Also, do gamer stores matter? To me, like they're individualistic reviews. So it's somebody who cares about a game. Somebody might be interested in something a little bit more than somebody else. IGN tries to just give it out to a person or somebody who's interested in a game or likes that type of genre so that it's not a person who's opinionated so much on one side versus another side. You want to give it to somebody who actually cares about playing the game. The other thing is Bethesda now at this point where they don't give out their games until day of so that everybody's playing the game at the same time puts themselves in this predicament every single time. Because people don't have enough time to write a review, so the review that they're going to give is whatever the quick version of that is. So if you're playing a game day one, and that day one patch does not fix the things that are broken in the game, and you require a Mass Effect Andromeda that needs a two-week layover to get an update, there's not enough time for me to wait for that. The time for me to wait for that is if you gave me the game a month ago, gave me the opportunity to review it, and then I told you of the issues that I came across, and then you were able to fix that bug prior to it hitting mass audiences. So you're getting what you reap what you sow, mm-hmm. basically. You get because you're so stern and you don't want anybody to give up information that now all of a sudden you have to deal with this stuff. So in his review, he didn't bash the Xbox version. He didn't bash the PlayStation version. He said, the version I played on PC, this part was broken. As a reviewer, to me personally, if I don't get that information, you know what I get? I get Batman. I get the bullshit that Rocksteady put out a year ago or a year and a half ago that was broken on PC that didn't work for anybody. So if he gave it, if he goes, you know, it was broken, but I still give it an 8. You know, well, F you, because now you're giving me a fake score on a game based upon something that was broken, and you're just giving it to me because the rest of the game is great. If even one person, two people, run into a 36-hour bug that bunks the entire game, that means over a mass that's going to hit a bunch of people. He should definitely give the score that he believes that it is, and, you know, be damned the consequences. I honestly felt very passionate about the fact that he gave that score, and the people that were bashing him are like either Bethesda apologists or people who just don't want to know the true problems with games when they have to be rushed out.
Yeah, and I think that he did mention in his article about how much he liked these parts of the game, and then when you see a score that's so negatively affected by the game breaking part of it, I think that weight to it could definitely affect somebody who was looking for the quality of the game and could have pictured his as being just a one-off thing. But exactly what you're saying, if this is a PC-specific issue, same way that Batman was a specific console genre issue, then it needs to be brought up there. And moving on from there, so just a quick game-breaking also scenario in our old game Destiny. Iron Banner dropped this week, and Iron Banner dropped as Mayhem. And Mayhem is really fun, but the problem is it broke Destiny Clan Wars, which us in Uprising, I can't think of almost going back a year to year and a half. Over a year and a half, I don't think Uprising has been outside the top three in all of Destiny clans in Destiny Clan Wars. I think we've been consistently in the top three with some first place finishes, but always in that top three range, at least the last year and a half. I'd be surprised if we were out of it, and if then, it might have been a fourth place. We've always been really high up there, and so everybody was rallying around Iron Banner again this week, and then to find out that Mayhem Clash can't count in Destiny Clan Wars because of how the data is pulled in the API. Bungie got with Dignac, who's the guy who runs Destiny Clan Wars site, and said they can't fix anything till they won't have a patch that will fix his ability to pull data from them to at least next week. So that basically eliminates this entire tourney. So right now we're just playing it for fun, but it does, the competitive spirits in Uprising are a little bummed this week and have to wait till next month to get their competitive fix going. So speaking of broken
games, are you kidding me? I'm not gonna bash because people lost jobs, so I respect that. But EA Montreal's cut back. Those are the developers that worked on Mass Effect Andromeda. And because this is a rumor, so I want to preface it with the word rumor, but a rumor that's has a lot of people that are saying that this is true. So like it would lead to be true, including IGN, that they are now considered a support studio for the Edmonton team, which is the team that's working on the brand new project for BioWare. What this says to me is this is a reaction to the sales and all the backlash that EA Montreal took from Mass Effect Andromeda. A lot of them have been diverted to either the new project or Battlefront. They were given a shot by EA to work on a brand new IP from an old IP, Mass Effect, and it didn't work out. And so they got one crack, and that's it. And what was said was Mass Effect Andromeda, or Mass Effect as an entity or an IP, is, air quotes, on ice right now.
Ooh.
So when I hear on ice, that means it needs to chillax for a while. Like, not just it needs to chillax from a Mass Effect Andromeda. It needs a 2 to 3 year break. People need to forget. People need to misremember.
Yeah, it needs the Fantastic Four treatment from Fox Movie Studios.
it needs the, you know what it needs, and this is what I heard on Unlocked, and I thought it rang true. It needs a Gears of War. It needs, like, you know what, this isn't Mass Effect Andromeda, it's now Mass Effect 4. You know what I mean? Like, we need Andromeda to be that offshoot of a Mass Effect that, like, mm-hmm. totally just screwed everything up, and we need to bring it right back. Like a offshoot of Halo, where everybody's like, ooh, that was a misstep. All right, let's get back to Halo.
Right.
Okay, everybody's mm-hmm. good. We're good.
Yep.
It looks like what's going to happen is Edmonton is going to get this as their offshoot of whatever their new IP is, which leads me into my next comment. Edmonton announced their new IP in January, and we're like, we're super excited. This is coming out in 2018. And now they've already delayed a game that has literally not been announced. We have no idea what it is, and it's already been delayed till the fiscal year of 2019, which is equal to April of 2018 through, you know, the new year. But they're delaying a game that nobody knows about, that nobody's talked about, aside from the fact that it's could be a Destiny-like shooter. It kills me that a team has to already delay a game that nobody even knows the name of.
Yeah, then and it should have never even been brought up to the public space at that point, if it's even possible to have something like that happen.
And now you feel like the team has to say something in E3 or has to show a demo because you want people to forget about Mass Effect Andromeda. So in order to do that, we got to show you a teaser trailer of some sort on this, like whether it's 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and a minute, whatever it is. But it just sounds like EA, outside of sporting events and Mass Effect being its, you know, lead IP, needs to find out its identity and figure out where it's going as a company outside of Madden and FIFA Soccer and whatever else they plan on doing. So EA is kind of in turmoil right now. Mass Effect as a whole is in turmoil right now. And that's coming after three really, really solid IPs back to back to back. It takes one. So we're in that era where like one Avengers movie doesn't do well, and then all of a sudden, Avengers is in trouble. You know what I mean? Like, if it does, you get this big budget, and then it delays, and you get this big budget. Same thing with gaming IPs. If things go south after 3-4 months, and there's delays, and then things happen, and the game doesn't hit right away, people's jobs are in jeopardy. So it's kind of a scary thing, I guess. I guess that's where I was going with it. As far as next week is concerned, for me personally, I started playing Nier Automata, but I didn't want to talk about it right yet because I just didn't feel like I had enough of an opinion on it. I'm about 2 hours in, and that's enough for me to get the opening story, but it's not enough for me to give you, you know, my basic opinion on the game only based upon the fact that this game is a 60-hour game, and I just felt it would have been forced had I said anything about it today.
Next week for me, I'll be talking a little bit more on Elder Scrolls Online, prepping for the June release of Morrowind. And it's like tonight, I'm actually going to be teaming up with Jeff Barry from Nerdentials and Too Long Did a Watch, and we're going to be doing some of the dungeons and stuff. So I'll be probably talking about some of that experiences too.
We're actually going to hold you to your Elder Scrolls, because you said that last week too.
I did play it. I just cut it because we had a lot to talk about.
Ah, okay. Well played. Good comeback, sir. Yeah, and same for me. I'm looking to finish up the Witcher DLC, but I don't know how long it's going to be. I might have it done. I might not, because I really don't know how much is left, because I haven't really looked too much forward to avoid spoilers with the story. It does look like there's a good bit more to it, but hopefully if I focus on the main story, I can finish it up, because I have enough side stuff covered to move forward, I think.
For me, I'm going to be doing the Wrath of Machine raid, hopefully finishing up the second challenge mode, the last challenge mode I have not done yet, as well as playing a lot more of Hot Wheels Forza Horizon 3.
I may actually join you in on that.
Sorry, I've been playing NBA Playgrounds. That game is hella fun. It's like NBA Jam. It's like NBA Jam. It's so much fun.
I was going to ask you if you picked that
up. I did. It's hella fun. It's really a lot of fun on the Switch. It sucks ass. But it's a lot
of fun.
You want
to know what we should also have announced for that was the fact that today also launched Minecraft on the Switch. With the ability to get a Mario mashup.
But
Nintendo paying Microsoft them dollars.
You can make a Mario level in Minecraft?
Yep.
There's Mario shit. It's not fun.
Okay.
I don't like Minecraft. I hate Minecraft. I'm just saying. My kids love it.
Mario's not
fun
anymore. Minecraft's
not. I'm not bashing Minecraft. My kids love it, but yeah, it's for me. It's just really super. It's super boring. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, let's get into the hype train. First up, we have Cajun with Blade Runner 2049.
Yes, sir. That we just got a trailer for that one, a full trailer. So we've been covering like teaser trailers for movies, and then when they come out with a full one, we're covering it. So yes, we've talked about it before, but this full trailer came out with a lot more scenes in it. You get to see the depth of it. You get to get some of the same feels from the original Blade Runner, which as a movie that was released 30 years ago or 35 years ago, it still holds up. In terms of the effects, the story I found tough to follow rewatching Blade Runner recently this year, but it set the stage for all future megacity shows that I don't think anybody did before, but everybody's done since. If you're in the future, if you're going to do something in the future and it's a big city, you make it look like Blade Runner did, and you make it that dark utopia. Just one line from this trailer that really got me was Jared Leto's line. He looks like he's the owner of a company that makes the AI. He says, "Every civilization is built on the disposable workforce, but I can only make so many." And that seems like it sets the tone that there's more of a need of this workforce than's there. And some other things are possibly happening. And does leave me a question at the end. I'll post you guys. Is Gosling's character a robot? Did y'all get that vibe from the end of the trailer?
The thing with that is that they're already throwing in, is Gosling this? Well, you know, the whole thing with Blade Runner was, is Harrison Ford's character an AI? Is he a modified AI? Is he one that can age? You know, everything, the whole, even and in every version that they came out with, a director, director's cut, this cut, every cut that they came out with would lead you, add a little bit more, and would still add you with more questions of, is he an AI? You know, now you think when you see this preview that he's aged and stuff, that, oh no, he's not an AI, but he could have been a different model that was allowed to age. Now the fact that they're throwing in the Ryan Gosling and having that kind of lead that in to have you kind of question that, it's Ridley Scott doing what Ridley Scott does.
This
and,
is Denis Villeneuve.
And
yeah.
That's Denis Villeneuve. I thought Ridley Scott was behind this.
This is Denis Villeneuve from Arrival is doing this one. Really?
Two things from this movie, from this trailer. One, Harrison Ford runs like an old man.
He's old.
Two, Fouts, be prepared. Ryan Gosling is a cool motherfucker. Because that he like when he was in every one of those scenes, he was just very chill, very relaxed. He was like he carried the scene. Like even the previews, he carried like each scene he was in. He was like very like I'm not gonna give you a whole lot of lines, but I'm gonna let you know how cool ass I am about this. And I thought it was for somebody who wasn't interested. When I watched this, I'm like, now maybe I might see this. Like I was very maybe. For me, because I could care less, I actually thought I might go watch this. I found it interesting. Damien, you want to talk about the
It trailer? Oh, quick. October 6th is when this comes out before we move on to It. So if anybody's looking to
see which is nice, which, by the way, is a really great time for this movie to come out because October is usually a real, real quiet time. You're going to get a lot of Halloween movies or whatever else is going to be playing around it. So an action movie with this kind of might get a little bit of get some pub, at least for that period of time.
It came out with a new teaser trailer. It does showcase more of the children in this. And one of the cool things is you get to see Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things. He played Mike Wheeler on Stranger Things. He's playing the main character in It, Richie Tozier. It's just seeing the interaction between the kids going into the sewer and stuff brought me back to it. It was a nostalgia grab. At the the made for TV film that they had done back in the I think it was in the 80s, and it's cool. You get to see Bill Skarsgård. You get to see his it start to do a creepy smile. This one definitely was not as fear inducing as some of the other trailers that we've seen, but still, if you hate clowns. It'll strike some fear in you, but it was just I liked seeing the interaction between the children child actors. I thought that it's building on that strong focus that these actors are going to play well together, and you're going to get a feel of that Goonies / Stranger Things atmosphere to the tone.
Yeah, I'm still not seeing it. Not that I'm scared of clowns.
I'm still not seeing it. That's great.
Yeah, I just don't like the jump scares.
I hate scary things.
I don't like jump scares.
Yeah,
this movie genre is all
it's gonna be full. This is gonna be full of it. Like I think maybe for the episode when we review this, maybe we'll see if we can bring Jeff Barry on since I'll have a little person to help champion horror films with me.
We can shoot.
How loud? As long as penises aren't involved.
As long as what are involved?
Penises.
Now, moving on from that awkwardly this way, moving over to Dunkirk over here, trying to get away.
Looks more like you're whacking it.
So, Dunkirk, it released a full trailer as well. And we get to see much more of the plot. We get to see Christopher Nolan's just very visceral filmmaking. And that's something he's always been known for. You see some of the shots of Nolan movies, like, man, it just feels more real, how he shoots some of the stuff. And it does look like Tom Hardy will be in an airplane for the entirety of this movie, just from how often he's shown in the airplane in this scene, or if it's really focused just on one big battle, which it will be, but how long this battle takes place, I'm not sure of, because it's doesn't look like it's going to give us much time to breathe in this movie. It's just going to be all go. Because what it's about is Allied soldiers, they get surrounded in World War II, and the basis of this battle was a lot of civilians came to their aid, and this plays both sides of it, the soldier side of it and the civilian side of it. It comes out July 21st. What are some of your thoughts on this new trailer?
I really felt that I got a sense of the civilian side of it with the boat and the people that felt compelled to go help the soldiers out. So, like, I felt for the soldiers on that note. I felt that they really tugged at that kid that was in there with the dad who was like, okay, we're going to go do this. And they kind of really focused on his character. And so we know that Normandy and, like, we know that there's a bunch of things that are, like, really important to this war. but maybe we don't know some of the smaller stories. And if they talk about the smaller stories, I think that will touch on a human note that everybody will be interested in on this film.
Yeah, no, I saw this. This actually preview played alongside Guardians of the Galaxy when I was in there, and so I saw this preview in 3D, and the 3D on this is pretty spectacular. Not that that's going to do anything along with the story, but the simple fact of how you know, seeing all the explosions, seeing everything that goes on, and then seeing those human moments, I do think that it's going to definitely be more of a. I think it's going to be slower than Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, really?
But I think I feel like it, because I feel like Nolan does a lot of story build up to his action sequence.
True, yeah.
And so I feel like you're going to get a lot of story, but he also does incredible action sequences, and so I feel like it's going to be a payoff. Like you're going to get a really big build up, and then a well-deserved payoff.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an emotional roller coaster because he's going to make you feel everything that he wants you to feel.
Yeah,
he's going to direct your feelings every way he wants them to go. And this is the movie that I go with my dad to see. This is the movie. It's just like, because a lot of people relate to it. And to Chris's point about telling the smaller stories, like this is the story I don't think us in America hear that much, but I was reading something that this is a common story taught in history in Europe, in England. So this is good for us on this side of the pond to hear that side of the story, because it's not something that's really taught much in schools, I think. So
also shout out when we're watching Guardians of the Galaxy, like all of these trailers that we've been talking about for the last like month were all a part of my Guardians trailers.
Yeah.
So like every single movie was like, oh, I've seen that. Oh, I've seen that. Oh, I've seen that. They didn't shock me with anything that came out during that movie because I'd seen every trailer and was interested in everything that they had talked about. So just know that we're on top of everything that's coming out or anything that's like prevalent, because hell, it was in every trailer that I watched.
Yeah, that's what I was. I was getting excited for stuff. I was like, ooh, and I could feel eyes of people. Didn't know if the people in the theater were actually looking at me. It was like, man, this guy's very excited. And even my wife was like, there was one that had started, and I forgot which one it was, but she hadn't picked up on what it was yet, and she wanted to know. She goes, which one's this? And I told her. And so, yeah, I was way on top of all of those things. Surprised I wasn't yelling out stuff like, Wonder Woman, Dunkirk in the theater. Moving on from the awesome trailers you saw in Guardians and the ones we will continue to see in all of these movies upcoming as they're released and we'll be in theaters like yelling them out and people are like, shut up, that's the ones, come on, before it's revealed to them. But Judge Dredd, it was announced that it will get a TV series. It's going to take place in the universe of Dredd, and very good likelihood it's going to take place in the Carl Urban Dredd universe. Whether he will lead it,
considering the showrunners from the film or the writers and stuff behind it, three of them are coming on for the series. And I mean, I know Carl Urban was really trying to champion getting a sequel, because I mean that it's his version was so well done. But I know that this one's targeting to film a team of judges. So I don't know if that means that, like, could we have Carl Urban appear in, like, as, say, a Bradley Cooper in,
Brain fart.
The TV show, The Smart Pills, damn it.
The show you're talking about. I just can't think of the thing, but yeah, where Bradley Cooper takes the pills to make him super smart, and they made a show.
Yeah, and then he said, they have the TV show. Yeah.
This one, that kind of concerned me when they said it's going to be a team of judges. I would like them focused on one judge. Initially, right off the back, I was like, well, Carl Urban stepped to do this as a TV show when he was really pushing for the sequel. But he already did that Fox show where he played a cop in the future. And he was working with that robot. And I really liked it. I was sad they canceled it. Yeah, it was
so a
big budget show, and I'm sad they canceled it. So, and I thought he did great in it, just as he did great in this one. So I really hope they get him to be a lead and they focus more on him. Brandon?
Real quick, that movie, you guys, in the TV show you're talking about is Limitless.
Ah, yes.
Yes, Limitless. Because Bradley Cooper plays the movie character, and he appears periodically throughout the series. So, I mean, even if they did something like that where Carl Urban appears periodically, maybe these are the younger judges coming up, and he's kind of like that, you know, the senior. I mean, that would at least do something, but, you know, whatever we can do, if we can get Carl Urban to play Judge Dredd at any aspect, would be amazing. The fact that he was able to go through that entire film with a frown on his face, you know how much that would freaking hurt? Like, if you just walk around doing that...
Damn it, Carl. You know,
yes, and I would love it if they focus on the big attacks like they did in the movie. Like, make it two or three episodes of one major attack instead of it being serialized where each episode comes to finalization. And I've said this many times before, a lot of shows I like the longer, drawn-out shows that I don't know when the finale is going to happen or when it's going to come to a revelation or when something new is going to happen. Because in a serialized show, I know at the end I'm going to get an answer. The drawn-out ones, you don't. I like being caught on surprise at it, so I really hope they did. That's one thing I liked about this movie, was the Carl Urban one. It was one attack, one building, one focus with resolutions coming, forcing come to the end. So doing that in a couple episodes on a show, I think, would be great. And doing that throughout the season, different ways of attacking it with maybe overarching villains would be very enjoyable for me. So yeah, we don't know when it's coming. I mean, just the studio and the rights holders reached a deal to produce the series very early stages. We don't know networks, we don't know dates, we just know it's coming, and we're excited about that.
Speaking of not knowing when something is coming, we are getting a Hellboy reboot.
Yes.
But that's all we're going to say about that. Oh. Otherwise, we'll go on for hours.
We don't actually know.
Thinking about not one.
Okay, next week. That is something we will talk about next week, because we already know who's probably going to be playing Hellboy.
Not if I don't. If I can block it.
That's a rumor. Now, they say that's not something we know. That is a rumor that Hellboy is going to be.
It's not official.
That's a rumor.
It's not official that it's out. It's not official. It might be our. There's nothing official about it. There's just official. My boy wants to have at least a cameo in it. At first, he wanted to be the lead actor. They were like, absolutely not. So then it was like, can I have a cameo? They're like, well, absolutely not. So, sorry. Not going to be in it.
Who's that?
The lead character of Hellboy.
Oh, he's not going to be allowed to be in Hellboy 3?
No.
That's not what I was talking about.
No, not Ron. Listen, Ron Perlman has no shot at being in this movie. He wants to be in the movie.
I know.
Just wants a paycheck. There's no paycheck involved. I'm sorry. I get so passionate about Hellboy. We've been talking.
Well, no, but you know who's. But the thing is the actor who that they're looking at trying to get play Hellboy is actually a good fit.
Like, it's a great fit. I'm like, except Ron Perlman is bitching about it. Like, oh, I want to be Hellboy. Dude,
I know
you're 90. Nobody wants you to be Hellboy. Nobody.
I was fine with him Hellboy in the first ones. I'd be fine with him in the future ones if they made him.
Sorry.
But I think Guillermo del Toro did a fine job leading the helm on that as well. Even Guillermo del Toro, just a couple of months ago, was tweeting how Hellboy 3 was officially fully dead, and that just maybe dead to him. And so, it's so up and down.
The third iteration done by him is dead. This is a complete reboot.
Oh, start from scratch. Got it.
Yes, this is a complete reboot, and they did announce that they are getting a rated R reboot of Hellboy. It was officially announced.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a rumor. I'm wrong.
I think it's time to get on to This Week in Geek.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
All right, so I've got one that's not even on our list. The 9th was the 20th anniversary of The Fifth Element, in case you guys didn't know.
Yes.
Speaking of
cities,
speaking of future mega cities, done the same way as Blade Runner, that's another one right there.
Right. But since it's back in the past, I saved it for the appropriate time frame. I don't want the general to come out and kill me. So May 10th, 1894, wireless is born when some guy named with the last name of Macaroni sends a radio wave 3/4 of a mile. 3 years later, the Macaroni Company will successfully communicate ship to shore over a distance of 12 miles. Macaroni's work leads to the commercialization of and proliferation of most of the radio technologies we know today, and they also make some good mac and cheese.
Yankee Doodle went to town. That's all I hear in my head.
And for Batman fans, it is Marconi. We were just playing.
Marconi. Eckhart. Think about the future.
Why did you say that name?
Why did you say Marconi instead of Macaroni? Why did you say that name?
May 6, 1998, at the Flint Center Theater, the same place where the Mac was first unveiled. Love anything Apple, so thank you for letting me do this one. Unveiled in 1984, Steve Jobs introduces the original Mac. The Mac was later known as the Bondi Blue after the color of its case, named after the beach in Australia. According to Jobs, the iMac is the internet age computer for the rest of us. Originally slated for available in 90 days, it was actually released in August 15th. Apple will book an unprecedented 150,000 orders before its release, marking the beginning of Apple's renaissance. It also ushered in the era of Apple adding the letter I to just about every product it created. But hey, Apple is about $80 billion, over $137 billion cash right now. So who's arguing? I was talking Fauci's.
This guy.
On Apple, I sent out a tweet to a bunch of my friends asking if they were having a bad day. And now I can't find it. And it says, if anybody's having a bad day, remember that today in 1976, Ronald Wayne sold his 10% stake in Apple for $800. Now it's for $58 million. So if you were having a bad day, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
All right. So up on May 11th, 2005, the World of Warcraft will never be the same after a raid goes awry with the infamous Leroy Jenkins.
Yes. Leroy Jenkins!
That's used even nowadays in Destiny raids so many times, especially like the final room in Crota. Just like, are you ready yet? And then somebody doesn't say it, and you just yell it out and just take off. Dang it, Leroy. Oh, yeah. It hits so many chords.
That's pop culture. Every time I have the sword, I try to yell it. Yeah.
Yep. And on May 5th, 1992, ID Software releases Wolfenstein 3D, the original first-person shooter game for DOS computers. The game becomes an instant success, putting ID Software on the map and launching the first-person shooter genre. And if you're curious, you can still play the game on Apple products through their App Store. It's available to play on their tablets and phones. And another Apple positive comment, and Brandon Stankeye.
That's because Apple can't innovate that. Anything oh. new. They have to go back to the old shit.
He just dropped the mic, but he didn't drop it because he didn't want to break his Yeti. So he just put his hands in the air.
Like I just don't care.
All right. It's been a fun cast tonight, everybody. But it's late. We got people all across the nation that need to get themselves into bed. So where can we find you, Chris?
You can find me at Tools, TWOWVZZ. And you can find me on Geekologist Radio. And I'm sure we're going to give out a shout-out to all of the other places you can find us geeks at.
All righty. And then with that, Fouts, where can we find you?
I am Groot. I am Groot. I am Groot. I am Groot. I am Groot.
So what he's saying is you can find him at...
any of the other ends of the podcast where you want to find them.
You can find him on Backpage.com.
No. That's where you can find Thomas Middle Dick spending quality time with Michael Fassbender.
Selling his services.
For 2 pennies on the dollar. You can find me on Twitter at BFouts82 and all over here. And I'll be editing the crap out of this. This has been a fun, and we should have some good outtakes, so stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. All right, and Derek, where can we find you, good sir?
You can find me at Caucasian Saint, CaucasianSaint on Twitter, Geekologist Radio, Uprising Family Gaming Network, And I'm looking forward to slow day at work tomorrow because I'm working from home. I've already told my boss that because I've had a long week and a long day today. I was like, and I'm recording tonight. So I didn't tell him that part. And so I'm working from home tomorrow.
All right. And you can find me at Mr. Damian Nash, all one word, on Twitter. You can also find me on the Geekologist Twitter, at Geekologist Radio, minus the T for character restrictions. You can email us at geekologist@ninjapancake.com. You can find us on the web at geekologistradio.com, queuedupmedia.com, or ninjapancake.com. And shout out to the guys at Nerdentials. We started our first side project. We recorded our first episode. We're going to record a few episodes before we actually start putting them out so that we always make sure that we have them out on a proper cadence. And that will be the Backlog Chronicles. Fouts.
And if you want something else to listen to besides our wonderful voices, go check out ninjapancake.com. They got lots of awesome cast there so that you can fill your time in the downtime when you're not listening to us.
Definitely. One of the ones that if you're just looking for something that you can listen to that's like 10, 12 minutes, you know, long or so, be sure to check out My Morning Coffee. And with that, we're out. I mean, you got Chrono there, and then I know you had the main character from, I can't think of the game.
I'm pointing along to help you see what he's pointing at for all our listeners.
Yeah. No, you can look.
It's the one over here, listeners. That one. And you see this one right here, listeners?
No, not that one. The other one.
You're an ass.
The one to the left.
I just said on our Twitter page we will have the image.
And we'll have fingers pointing to it just like this.
See our Twitter page right now. Like, you said my name. Do you think that I'm the Ryan Gosling of the podcast where I just sit there, I say very little, but I'm the coolest mother in the...
No, but I feel like you might cut out the fact that I said mother... that's why I said it.
And that makes you the coolest.
And that, I guess, this makes you the coolest. Now it's twice.
Said it twice. Oh, so nice.
So maybe he'll give Ron Perlman a shot in Death Stranding.
Yeah. I actually thought Ron Perlman was Thanos for the longest time.
That dude is dead.
Yeah, I really thought he was
that
Thanos.
That poor guy. I feel so bad for that dude. I had my one shot in life, and it's gone.
He had a great run in Sons of Anarchy.
I was just going to say.
That was a well-watched, well-reviewed show. He
was also Beast. In Beauty and the Beast.
What?
The TV series.
Okay.
Yeah, you can CGI the shit out of anything.
I was like, Beauty and the Beast just released as a movie last month or so.
No, the TV series. The TV series.
So confused.
I'm so mean to Ron Perlman. I don't even know the guy. I rake this guy over the coals.
Okay.
And I have no
idea who this guy is. He was excellent in City of Lost Children.
What is that?
City of Lost Children.
Is that like City of Men?
Oh my god. There were a couple of kids that were really good in Goonies.
This
has gone off the rails.
We've lost control. Ron Perlman has
lost control. As soon as you brought Ron Perlman, things have gone off the rails.
Ron Perlman and his giant face have put this on.
Screw that guy. 80-year-old. Like, that's ridiculous. That guy's like 100.